around in the great big city. Fast money and the life will never show you no pity. Oh, I work hard trying to make my bones. But times have changed and I just got to move. Can't run away, can't run away, can't run. I can't run away, can't run away from the things that I've done.
Hey, welcome to Writer's Tricks of the Trade. I'm Morgan St. James, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes, along with my co-host, Dennis N. Griffin. Our guests and authors are professionals in the publishing business, and they'll be sharing their experiences and techniques. Just so that you note it, we are on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month, 6 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and Writer's Tricks of the Trade brand includes my book of the same name, which is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and most online bookstores, a bi-monthly e-zine, and a blog. And now, our radio show, with topics covering everything from A to Z when it comes to writing and the book business. Our guest tonight is author, musician, and audiobook narrator Mike Dennis, coming to us from Key West, Florida. After 30 years as a professional musician, Mike left Key West for Las Vegas in 2006. With the thought of becoming a professional poker player. But after several years in Sin City, he moved back to Key West, where he lives with his beautiful wife, Yolanda. They were married in 2012 on a warm night in Havana, Cuba. Mike currently writes two series, the Key West Nocturne series and the Jack Barnett Las Vegas series. Author Max Collins, who is a multi-nominated award winner, has said Mike Dennis is a master of noir. Adding one more notch to his career belt, in mid-2013, Mike got into audiobook narration and production. He currently has over 40 titles available on Audible.com, Amazon, and iTunes. If you want to learn more about Mike, his website is HTTP, and of course the colon and double backslash, MikeDennisNoir.com. That's M-I-K-E. DennisNoir.com. Our producer, Eric Miller, is manning the switchboard, and you can participate in tonight's show through our chat room or by calling in at 646-478-0982. That's 646-478-0982. And tonight we're going to discuss creating dynamic dialogue with Mike. He writes very compelling dialogue, and also, with the audiobooks now so popular, there are actually considerations for compelling dialogue in audiobooks that might differ from the dialogue in the printed word. It helps tell the story and move it along. It allows the author to reveal some of the backstory, that is, what the author knows but the reader doesn't. And through casual references in dialogue between characters, it's also a great way to hint at what's to come.
Unfortunately, particularly with novice writers, they are so anxious to get all the details out in front that the dialogue and narrative both become what is called information dumps. The trick is to strike a balance and keep the reader engaged with realistic chatter. Mike will be sharing the techniques he uses to hook the reader and keep them turning the pages as his stories unfold.
Yeah, and just to give you some quick credentials for Denny and me, I've now written over 11 books and over 600 articles about the craft and business of writing. I frequently appear on panels or give workshops, and my latest release is the new Silver Sisters mystery, Terror in a Teapot. The Kindle edition is currently available on Amazon, and the paperback will follow soon. Denny has written 16 books, many dealing with the lives of former mafia members, and he's appeared on TV or as a speaker, panel moderator, and has also hosted radio shows for the past 7 years. You can learn more about me by visiting my website, www.morganstjames-author.com. That's www.morganstjames-author.com, or you can visit the Writer's Tricks of the Trade.blogspot.com for upcoming show topics and more information. Denny, why don't you give us where people can find out more about you?
Sure. I'm at www.dennisngriffin.biz. That's B-I-Z.
Okay, so now without taking any more time to sing our own praises, we'll jump right into creating dynamic dialogue. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, Morgan. I want to thank you for having me on the show. It's a great honor, and I'm very pleased to be here on this fine night.
Well, I'm sure that you're going to have a lot of information to give our listeners. One of the things I wanted to ask you, you know, we've mentioned that a lot of times in dialogue, it isn't really the way people speak, and it may not be the way to write the dialogue portion of the scene. And you write great dialogue. So can you share some of the things that you use, some of the techniques you use to make it really snappy and engaging?
Well, the first thing that I try to do with dialogue is I try to make sure that it is relevant to the story. And by that I mean, you know, when people speak to one another in ordinary circumstances, there's a lot of what you might call throwaway language. You know, hey, how you doing? Pretty good. How are you? Yeah, not bad. You know, all this kind of stuff. And I try to leave all that out and just cut it down to the words and sentences that move the story along or are relevant somehow to the story. This is one way that you can do it, which I think will keep the reader's attention. Because I'll tell you, I read a book one time. I don't want to mention the name of the book because a lot of people like that book, but it's an older book. It was written many years ago, and the author is now dead. So there was a lot of throwaway dialogue in there. Now, this book is considered a sort of a watershed book in some respects, but there's a lot of throwaway dialogue, useless conversation that is just on every page, and it was very tough slogging through it. Had he left that out, what the dialogue that would have remained was very compelling. And I think that's the trick, is to leave all that out and keep the things in there that are relevant to the story.
What do you think a person can do to test themselves, you know, after they've written the dialogue? Is it a good idea to have somebody else listen to it or to tape record it? Or how would you check yourself to make sure that you've gotten tight dialogue that doesn't bog people down and have them go, oh, the heck with this book, I've had it?
Well, I go over it, you know, of course, after I write a scene, I read over it several times, make sure that the dialogue does flow naturally. It has to sound like people talking. It can't sound stilted. But like you pointed out earlier, it should sound. It can't sound exactly like people talking because you have to cut out all of that, all of the you knows and I means and all of those kind of things. So it's a trick. But I do it by just reading over the scene over and over, and I ask myself, does this sound like a real human being? Does this sound like this character talking? It has to match the character that you've drawn in the book. And I mean, you can't have somebody who's got a third grade education quoting Shakespeare, for example. But it has to match the character, and you have to ask yourself, is this how this character would say this?
You know, Denny and I ran into that when we wrote a book together called La Bella Mafia. That's actually the memoir of a woman with an amazing background, and our editor was editing some of the scenes where she had it sounding like a PhD in psychology, and you know, we finally had to say, hey, this is not that character. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
Denny, if you have any comments or questions, just jump right in.
As a matter of fact, I do.
Okay, well, we'll let you do that. You can step on my toes.
Mike, Denny Griffin here. Thanks for being
yes,
with us
Denny.
Tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Just to go back to what you were saying a couple of minutes ago about the book you read, the older book, and the unnecessary dialogue. And that reminds me of a book, I'm not going to mention the name of the book, but I read a book that, in my mind, the dialogue, a lot of it, didn't add anything to the story. It did not advance the story at all, didn't explain anything. And
right.
I had been hoping that maybe later on in the book I could see the justification, that there'd be something down the road. But there wasn't. And I couldn't help but come away with the feeling that the author was trying to get a word count and looking for filler. Does that ever happen, do you think?
I'm sure it does happen. It doesn't happen with me, I can tell you that, because my books are
well, that's why you're our guest on the show.
Right. I need filler. But, I mean, my books are all around 50,000 words, and that's probably why, because I cut out a lot of the unnecessary dialogue. But
I know. You told me one time, no matter what you do, you can't seem to get past 50,000.
I can't. I really can't. I got 51,000 one time, and I thought I, you know, I thought it was a doorstop. But,
it was War and Peace.
Yeah, right, yeah. But War and Peace.
So,
right.
Here's a comment that I have, and maybe, Denny, you want to jump in on this, too. There's the thing that the situation should create the dialogue, not the dialogue creating the situation. How do you feel about that?
Are you asking me or Denny?
Both.
Okay.
And you can go first,
ahead,
Mike, because you're our guest.
Oh. All right. Well, I think that the situation should create the dialogue, although there are times when the dialogue can create the situation. The dialogue can introduce a new element to the story, a new twist, a new movement forward in the story, in which case the dialogue would create the situation. But it's still it must sound like that character who's speaking. If it doesn't sound like that character, you've lost.
Yeah, and what thoughts do you have on that, Denny?
Well, yeah, I had to tell you the truth. I hadn't thought about it. That's very true. And I always looked at dialogue, well, obviously to advance the story, but to fill in information that I couldn't get in the book any other way, I would want to have it come out in the dialogue. I thought that was an excellent venue to introduce things in kind of a logical manner. And I don't know what Mike's thoughts are on that, but there's a lot of things that I've gotten into my books through dialogue that I couldn't think of any other way to do it, and dialogue
right.
seemed to be the logical way.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, that brings up another point is, and especially novice writers tend to do this, and, you know, this is where you'd go over 50,000 words, Mike, but sometimes novice writers tend to have the character repeating and repeating things that the reader already knows.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that gets really tedious. It becomes an information dump. And
it's
the
a
writers
tip-off
that
the book
do,
is not going to be any good. It's a tip-off
yeah.
the book is not going to be any good.
Yeah.
When they do that.
Yeah, in fact, I think if an agent saw that, they'd probably immediately 86 the book because,
I'm sure they would.
You know, it can go on and on. You know, you remember back when you were my brother and you were fat and I was thin, and you know, and
right.
it goes
yeah.
on and on. Well, of course he remembers when he was his brother.
Right. And that's just the way that novice writers will try to get in backstory because they don't know how else to do it otherwise. Another problem they have is the use of adverbs and dialogue tags.
Oh, my God,
like,
yes.
He said forcefully. You know, now, if you have to use an adverb, then you've already lost the battle. What you have to do is you take the word forcefully out of the dialogue tag and add forceful dialogue. That's what you have to find the words to make that dialogue forceful so the reader knows that he's saying it forcefully. That's how you have to do it. You can't add it in the dialogue tag. To gloss over it. It has to be in the dialogue.
Like, would you please get over here, he said forcefully, as opposed to get the hell over here.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or if another way to do it is you could have a non-dialogue sentence immediately preceding the dialogue showing action of some kind that would otherwise be controlled by an adverb.
Yeah, yeah. Or
you know,
when we're speaking about adverbs.
Showing the speaker's jaw tightening or, you know, his face reddening or something happening.
Right.
You know, I mean, something
fist clenching.
To convey this tension that you're trying to convey with an adverb. You have to drop the adverb and show it another way, either through find the words to put in the dialogue or use it as action before the sentence of dialogue.
Right, and you know, even right in that same vein is when we talk about adverbs and adjectives is using multiple ones, which is even worse.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like he said in a forceful, gentle, cajoling voice,
right.
Where it just keeps going on, and the reader is going, come on already, get past this. I got it.
Mike?
Yes?
I'd like to ask you a question. I've recently wrote a book for a former mobster, and the book was, first person in his words. And what I did was I didn't use, when he was narrating, I used fairly decent grammar.
Uh-huh.
But when there was dialogue between him and another person, I would then use more of the gottas and gonas and drop the G's on some more doing.
Yeah.
And,
right.
What do you think about that? I didn't use his lingo all the way in the narrations, but I did in the dialogue. Is that
good, bad? I read that book, and I think that you handled it very well. When you like you're talking about dropping the G's and throwing a lot of slang vernacular word combinations like gotta and woulda and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In narrative, when you do that in narrative, it gets pretty annoying, you know, real fast.
Right.
In dialogue, it'll hold up because now the person is actually speaking out loud, and you can hear him. You know, if you put your do your dialogue right, the reader can hear the person say it. But you don't have to hear the person say the narrative. You just have to read the narrative. And as long as you can convey the same streetwise sense that this guy had in the narrative without resorting to dropping the G's and so on, then you've done your job, which I might add you did very well in that book.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mike. And just to follow up, if I could, when a person is speaking, and I've seen in dialogue and books I've read, what I thought was, you were talking about the action. You don't want to say he said forcefully. You want to show. And I've seen a lot of people do that or attempt to do that through italics or exclamations.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good way, or is it better to do it a different way?
You know, there's a school of thought that says you should never use italics and never use exclamation points. There's another school of thought that I adhere to, which says you should never say never do anything. You know?
I love it.
And so, using italics and exclamation points can be overdone very easily, but in the right hands, they can be very, very effective. I see nothing wrong with it. As long as you do it tastefully, and as long as you don't use it as a crutch. And believe me, you know, you can really spot when someone's using it as a crutch without going too far into the book.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say...
after you, my dear.
I was going to say that there's another rule, there's another rule that says you have to reveal a lot of your story in narrative and then reveal some of it through dialogue and you can't do too much backstory and all this kind of thing. But I read a book, now we're talking about rules here and how you can break them if you know what you're doing. There's a writer named Tom Piccirilli who wrote a book called the Every Shallow Cut, it's called. It came out of 2-3 years ago. And it is an outstanding book and it violates every single rule I've ever seen about writing. He throws in all kinds of backstory. The whole first half of the book is backstory, and then the second half of the book is almost all dialogue, and yet he pulls it off and it's a true masterpiece. I mean, it's one of the greatest books I've ever read, and it's a short book, not very long, but it's very, very well done, and the central character doesn't even have a name, but it's just he violates every single rule, especially about dialogue. but he does it so well that this is what I'm talking about. You can't ever say never do this or never do that because he did it and it came out perfect.
So that kind of punctuates the saying that rules are made to be broken if it's appropriate.
Yeah, my favorite saying is Somerset Maugham, a quote from Somerset Maugham from many years ago. He said, there are only three rules of writing. Unfortunately, no one knows what they are.
I like that. Hey, producer Eric, are you there?
Yeah. Yes,
yeah. What's one of your pet peeves in dialogue?
Well, I just wanted to back up a second. Mike, what was the name of that book again you mentioned?
That was called
Violated Every Rule.
Yes, right. It was called Every Shallow Cut by Tom Piccirilli.
Oh.
Came out about, 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. I don't know. I don't remember. Not too long ago.
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to repeat it for everybody that might be interested.
Piccirilli's had about 25 novels out, so he's a veteran writer, and he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I think I've seen that, but I might be interested in that. My pet peeves, you nailed it. The dialogue tags that just are trying to reinforce weak writing just drives me crazy. And as a freelance journalist, you really learn to drop that because your editor is like, you know.
He gets out the blue pencil and you're done.
Yeah, and you're strict. You know, you got 250 words, you got 500 words, so you really got to make some sizzle. And when you switch over to fiction writing, some of the same rules apply. So I don't think I just have anything new to add other than dialogue tags, I think, it slows down the story to the point that you can close the book, and you don't have to burn.
The book would move so much quicker, more quickly, I should say, and so much it would be so much easier for the reader if the adverb, whatever he's trying to say in the adverb, were shown in the dialogue. If he had the right words in the dialogue to create that he was trying to say with the adverb.
Yeah, you know, that brings me to another thing, Mike. With all of your audiobook narration, do you find that sometimes what works in a print book doesn't necessarily work in an audiobook? And the thing that comes to mind for me is some of Robert B. Parker's books, where he uses lots and lots of C tags. He said, she said, they said, we said. And while it's fine when you're reading it because they kind of disappear, when you're listening to it, it becomes really, really annoying. And
it is.
With audiobooks becoming so popular, is there something that authors should be aware of if they anticipate their book going to audio?
Well, I wouldn't recommend writing a book with audio in mind.
Okay.
Because if the book is well written, it will translate to audio very well. There are very few exceptions. There might be a phrase here and there every once in a great while that somehow doesn't sound right in audio. But, you know, that's not going to be a factor. But if the book is well written, it will translate well to audio. I did an audio book that, just like you said, where, you know, it wasn't he said, she said, but it was I replied. And I swear that writer put that phrase in must have been 200 times in that book.
Oh, good
and
God.
And I was getting embarrassed having to say it like every other sentence. I replied, I replied, I replied. And I don't think he realized that he was doing it. He couldn't have realized it because if he did.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
He might have had a reply, though, if you had pointed it out.
Well, it's not my job to edit the book. I mean,
no, that was a joke.
Right. Okay.
You know, I'm seeking your reply about all these replies.
Okay, now
right.
for some fun, what would you suggest to transform a ho-hum dialogue into something that's really a dynamic, believable exchange? You know, this is another thing, and again, comes more with novice writers, is that the statements in the dialogue are so flat that it doesn't do a thing for the book. And what can a writer do as they're learning this craft to kind of jazz up their dialogue so that it grabs the reader?
I would say get with somebody, another person, and start by describing this character, who the character is, who he or she is. Describe everything about him or her. Now, are they? Is this character their age? Their likes and dislikes, everything you know about the character, what type of person they are, what type of character they are. I mean, what, you know, how much character they have. You know, are they good? Are they a good person? Are they a bad person? How do they feel about them, their place in society? You know, this kind of thing, and describe all that, and then read a passage of their dialogue, of maybe a few paragraphs of their dialogue, and ask that person that you're describing all this to, does this sound like this character?
Good thought. Yeah, so it's always good to have some sort of a writing buddy or a friend that you can bounce things off of.
Yeah, somebody who's going to give you an honest opinion now. I mean, don't make it,
exactly,
you know,
exactly. Not Aunt Agatha who says, well, darling, everything you write is so wonderful.
Yeah, perfect, yeah, right.
Especially when it's garbage.
But you know, there's a book out called, we're talking about dialogue tags. There's a book out called The Friends of Eddie Coyle. It came out about 1970.
Oh, I remember that title. I don't remember the book, right. But I remember the title.
It was written by George V. Higgins, and it's probably one of the greatest crime fiction novels ever written. And it was turned into one of the greatest crime fiction noir movies ever filmed with Robert Mitchum about 1973. And it's called The Friends of Eddie Coyle. And in it, every single line of dialogue has a suffix, he said or she said. Every single line of dialogue. Someone said, da-da-da-da-da, he said. Da-da-da-da-da-da, he said. Not even they replied or he added or no. He said, she said, they said, he said, he said, he said, Eddie said, they said, you know, and so on and so forth. It's always, and it's every single line of dialogue. And you'd think it would drive you nuts after a while, but it didn't, because the strength of the dialogue, now this is a book in which virtually 80% of the book is dialogue, and almost the entire story is revealed in dialogue, almost the entire story. And it's so well written that you don't care about all these dialogue tags, how the excessiveness of them. You just don't care. Because the power of the narrative of the dialogue and the story just draws you right in and blinds you to everything else. But again, an example of a rule that was broken by somebody who knew exactly what he was doing.
You know, that might be a good book for people to read just to study how the dialogue was done.
It's a great book for dialogue because, like I say, virtually the whole story was revealed in dialogue, and there's relatively few passages of pure narrative.
Yeah, do you want to repeat the title of that book again?
Yes, it's called The Friends of Eddie Coyle, Coyle. And it takes place in Boston. It's about a working stiff gangster, low-level, street-level gangster, and who was later played by Robert Mitchum in the movie. But it's just a fantastic book. I can't recommend it highly enough.
Great. Well, you know, we're starting to get close to that time when we're going to wrap up, so I want to ask you one more question.
Okay.
Most of us have heard the expression, he spoke from the heart. And what thing do you think makes people feel that somebody is speaking from the heart? Is it the situation you've set up or the way the person reacts to it?
Well, if he speaks from the heart, you have to have dialogue that is clearly coming from the heart.
Yeah, and, hopefully it isn't kaboom, kaboom,
yeah.
Kaboom.
Right. And so, you know, it's up to the writer at that point to put in, you know, heartfelt dialogue and then not say he spoke from the heart so that the reader feels to themselves he spoke from the heart.
Yeah, this has been a really good session, and we're going to have to wrap it up pretty quick. So
okay.
I want to thank everyone for listening. And until the next time, God bless and stay safe. And so many thanks to Mike for being our guest author. Our next show is December 10th.
Thank you, Morgan, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was a pleasure. And our next show is December 10th with guest artist and author Phyllis Bradner, who's also my co-author on the Silver Sisters Mysteries. And our topic will be writing with a partner.
We do have, according to our time, we do have just under 3 minutes left of recording. So if anybody does want to add anything, now would be the time. We have 2 minutes and 45 seconds left, according to my producer monitor.
I'd just like to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, and, I would too.
Happy and safe.
You're going to be out.
Indeed. Yeah.
Yes,
drive
and
safe.
If you're out on the road, drive carefully.
Yeah. And slowly.
And slowly, yes.
Watch out for pedestrians carrying gift bags. Beware of them. They might be up to no good.
Oh yeah.
I know. I mean, that sounds like something that might happen in Key West or Las Vegas. You know, you have the criminal shopper. That might be an idea, right?
Oh well, you know, they have this new thing where they're leaving a phony $100 bill on the windshield wiper, and when the person gets out of the car, they either carjack the car or reach in and grab the things that have been put in the car. That
wow.
was something that was just on the news.
Where is that happening?
In Las Vegas, it was on the news.
Wow. Well,
it's a pretty clever scam, you know, and the $100 bill isn't even real, so.
Oh, that's tough. Well, you know, $100 bills, they don't even look real any. I went out and I hit a little jackpot the other day and had dinner last night. It was my wife and I's anniversary, our 9-year anniversary. And like $100 bills, they don't look real anymore. They got that metal strip down the middle and they're kind of
monopoly. Yeah, they look terrible. I hate the new money.
Yeah,
it's almost like they're trying to do what they do in some of the European countries, you know.
Yeah, but
where,
beautiful money. I mean, something like a 500 franc note, you know, I mean, it's red and, you know, great artwork. I think you're right. I think maybe our money is moving toward a more appealing look. Okay, 25 seconds left.
Okay.
Well, I want to thank
Good
you,
night,
Morgan,
everybody.
For having me on. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show, and I had a great time.
Okay.
Thanks,
well, once again, thank you so much, Mike.
All right.
It was a pleasure
Bye-bye.
Talking to you.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks. All right.
Good night,
Take
everybody.
Care. Good night.
Around in this great big city, fast money and the life will never show you no pity. Oh, I work hard trying to make my bones, but times have changed and I just got to move. I can't run away, I can't run away, I can't run. I can't run away, I can't run away from the things that